everyone. My name is Amy Coonan Taylor, and I am a marketer on a mission to find out how big ideas can solve today's biggest problems. This passion is why I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share the transformational stories of entrepreneurs, industry influencers, and the world's biggest brands. With past episodes featuring leaders from powerhouse organizations like Seven Generation, the Atlanta Hawks, the National Wildlife Federation, and startups like Impossible Foods, Blue Land, the show is sure to engage, educate, and inspire the next generation of innovators. Don't forget to subscribe and download on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartMedia so you don't miss a thing. You can check out rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. I am super excited to be joined today by a Town Hall veteran. This is his fourth time, Rubicon's Chief Strategy Officer, Michael Allegretti. And in a few moments, I'm going to be handing over the reins of the show to Michael, who will essentially co-host this episode to talk to our guest today, Shante Eldridge, the Executive Government Advisor for Amazon Web Services. Michael and Shante shared the stage together on a panel called How the Cloud and IoT Are Enabling Smart Waste Management in Our Cities. So that should be some indicator of the direction in which we're all going to go today. We're going to talk all things tech to make smarter and more resilient cities. But before I transition the show fully, let's kick things off with a quick career synopsis from each of you, I guess, to kind of lay groundwork for the audience. Shante, let's start with you. Briefly walk me through your professional timeline.
Absolutely. It was not a straight timeline. You know, obviously in government, we can wear multiple hats. And so I started out in criminal justice and law enforcement, worked for the state's attorney's office for several years, worked for a governor, came back to the state's attorney's office for a couple more years. But more importantly for this conversation, I was actually the chief of policy for the Baltimore City Department of Public Works. And that is where I really got a great understanding of water and wastewater, but more importantly about recycling and waste management. And then my final job before I came to Amazon Web Services 3 years ago was the deputy chief of operations for the city of Baltimore.
Michael, same for you. How did you get, you know, fired up for smart cities?
Well, it's great to be with you, Amy and Shante. So, you know, my professional journey, similar to Shante's, has spanned government and technology. I worked for a number of years helping to organize something called the C40, which was a meeting of the 40 largest cities in the world to address climate change and resiliency. And from that, really started to develop a love and a passion for all things related to sustainability in cities, and was in a number of policy roles in and out of government in that vein. And then had the fortune to move from that space over to Uber, which was my transition from the policy world to the tech world. And then from Uber over to Rubicon, where I've been for the past 5 years. So, you know, my passion is really about cities and resiliency and improving quality of life in communities. And it's something I get to do every day here at Rubicon. And I really do love that.
So let's get started. This is now the point where I can kind of kick my feet up. And Michael, you know, don't mess up my show. Have a good time.
Well, Shante, I can assure you, Amy handing the reins over to me is a very big deal. So you and I need to do a good job today.
I'm excited. I think we've only done it once before, but you guys are going to be great.
Well, you know, I do want to stay with this vein of kind of professional development for a moment before we talk smart cities. I say this all the time when you and I are on a panel together. You're truly one of my favorite people to interface with in these panels and just, you know, brainstorming in general. And we talk so much about smart cities, and we will in a moment, but I think your career path is really inspiring because for so many of us, myself included, who have been in the political world, have been in the policy world, and we want to jump to the private sector or the tech sector, there's kind of this implied understanding that, well, you can go into lobbying and you could be the government affairs person for a company, but you've done something quite different. And I'm just curious, like, how did you make that happen? How did you get a role, a business role in technology versus just kind of a government affairs role? And has that been a rewarding journey for you?
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Michael. You know, it's always a pleasure talking with you and in these conversations. And the one thing I'll say is it really starts with mentorship. And I think that's one of the things that we as leaders, you know, especially when we get late in our career, don't really think we need or maybe don't have mentors. And I actually was very fortunate to have a mentor throughout my career, no matter what agency I was with, that really elevated what I was doing. And I do have a passion for technology. I started writing code when I was with the state's attorney's office, you know, my first job into public sector. And that was by accident because no one knew how to build a database. And so I was always having tech as part of my, you know, what I was working on. But when I finally got to, you know, the point in my career where I was like, you know what, I've done public sector for 20 something odd years. I want to do something different. I knew that technology was going to be the way to go. And I knew that that was something that was spanning across government. It wasn't just policy. It wasn't just technology. And so I was really fortunate to come across a position at Amazon Web Services that was looking for someone that had a technical background, but also had that, you know, the political or the public sector experience. And I'm glad to see that that's actually changing. You know, I can honestly say maybe 5 or 10 years ago, Michael, you're right. The only place for government employees to go after leaving government service was in lobbying or policy work. And I think, you know, a lot of companies are really recognizing the value that government employees can have because we deal with things that don't happen normally. You know, I had to deal with a social unrest when the Freddie Gray happened in the city of Baltimore. You know, I've had to deal with cows running down the street during rush hour because it was hit by one of the trucks. Yeah. You know, these are things that are crises that you're not going to get from a normal day-to-day 9-to-5, you know, in the private sector. So, you know, it's been a great experience to come to Amazon Web Services and really get a chance to do what I love, but also get a chance to still connect with public sector.
Cows running down the street during rush hour in an American city.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember this line, Sean.
It was an interesting day.
Well, that's a great message about mentorship. And I, you know, I agree with you. I believe it with every fiber of my being that there is this expanded role and expanded demand for public sector employees in the private sector. And I think it will only improve our economy and the way companies and cities function in the future. So let's talk about your company. You work at Amazon or AWS specifically. Every listener has obviously heard of your company. It powers so many aspects of all of our lives. We at Rubicon obviously work very closely with AWS, our product, Rubicon Smart City, as well as our company's other products, Rubicon Pro, Rubicon Connect, Rubicon Premier. They all rest on your platform and are powered by your platform. But I'd love to for you to tell our listeners a bit about how AWS specifically is driving the creation of smart and resilient cities. It's not necessarily a natural thing that someone would assume a cloud service provider is in the city business. What does that mean?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing that when we talk about smart cities, it's one of those buzzwords that's become, you know, part of our nomenclature over the last several years, you know, innovation, smart cities. But what we're really talking about when we talk about Amazon Web Services is really connected cities and connecting the constituents to their government and making sure that they're having a great experience, the same great experience that they're having with private companies such as Amazon, you know? And so I think when in terms of smart cities, it's really being able for constituents and employees to get the data they need and the services they want in the vein or in the way that they want to get them. You know, some people like my mother, they still want to go into the DMV. It boggles my mind, but that's where she's at, you know, but she should also have a great experience as somebody who wants to go online to renew their driver's license. And so when I think about, you know, how Amazon Web Services is playing in that arena, we're really enabling governments to do more with less, do it more efficiently, but again, utilizing modern technology that you would only see sometimes from the bigger corporations. That cloud has enabled governments of all sizes to have that great experience and use that modern technology.
You know, we were so proud to be featured in a documentary by AWS recently about our partnership with y'all. And I believe, you know, there were three other companies around the world that were out as well in this Climate Next series. Is this a growth area for Amazon? I mean, is this the public sector a big bet for the company's future?
It absolutely is. And I'm so glad you brought up the, you know, the documentary series that we just did highlighting, you know, Santa Fe, how they leverage Rubicon. But this is, you know, not just climate, but just elevating how governments are functioning is definitely something that we're involved in. And climate being one of those things. And making sure, again, that constituents are getting the services they need. And I think that's one of the things that was really highlighted during, you know, the last 2 years with the pandemic. Governments realized that they did not have the resources to really adequately serve all residents, not just the ones that had internet, not just the ones who were tech savvy, but now we're really changing how we are engaging our constituents. And so Amazon Web Services definitely playing a role in that. And we are definitely making sure that we are at the forefront to help governments who want to make that leap.
So as we, you know, approach the holidays right now, so many plans, particularly in the Northeast, the Midwest, are being disrupted once again by COVID. It seems, you know, insane to say that, you know, COVID has these silver linings, but I guess it does, right? We have learned things about ourselves as people, as families, and I guess as a society. Can you talk a bit about that in the vein of government? Like, what has the acuteness of COVID hopefully subsiding, what have we learned from it in terms of governments, and how can they start to think differently coming out of this for the future?
I think the one thing that governments realize is how much they're relying on paper and how much they're relying on manual process. Because, you know, I couldn't imagine when I was in government, I had to maybe move people from one building to another or one floor to another. In March of 2020, the entire government basically went home, which meant all of their files, all their records, especially if they were using their own servers or legacy in-house systems, were left on premises. And so how do you provide services for people who need benefits when their paperwork is physically in an office? And governments really realize we got to do things differently, you know, and we also realize that not everybody is available to come into an office 5 days a week. We have different structures now with families, you know, people taking care of their parents or their kids. They need to be able to work and have a flex schedule, or they're rural. You know, it takes them an hour and a half in traffic. And, you know, I'm just down the street from Baltimore, maybe about 20 miles. And sometimes it takes me an hour when I was working in the city. And so I think governments are really realizing we got to do things differently, but getting off those legacy systems, getting off of all the paper, and really making it easier for not just the constituents to get the services, but also the employees just to do their jobs.
So, I mean, to really just dumb this down for a second, right? When we say, you know, migrating our system cloud, having cloud-based systems, what we mean is having, you know, at the simplest level, having systems that can be accessed and operated from anywhere in the world versus these legacy systems that might require a man or woman going into a physical place and getting on a physical machine that exists in only one place. I guess that's a big idea, right? I mean, that's, at least in government, represents a sea change in terms of thinking and operations. How do we get there, Shante? Like, what do we specifically, what do governments need to do, and what can the private sector do to accelerate that transition?
Well, you know, I don't want to date myself or have the listeners realize how old I actually am, but I remember when I was in the office and we did not have desktop computers for every person in the office. I know it's mind-boggling. And we had the desktop computers that had the two monitors, right? Now you have a whole thing that's in one, you know, they're called laptops. And so that was scary. You know, how are people actually going to have these computers on their desk? I mean, think about phones. You go into an office now, everybody's voice over IP. Nobody has landlines anymore. Those are sea changes. And those came probably a little bit easier than sometimes in cloud. But I think what's really also happening with the evolution of ransomware, that we're going to have leaders that are going to have to make that shift. And from working in government, Mike, you know, we both realize government is risk averse. No one wants to see their elected official on the Sunday paper above the fold because something went drastically wrong, or, you know, money was misspent or something nefarious happened. But at the end of the day, if governments don't start looking at how they become more efficient and using the technology that is proven, right? Cloud's been around for a while. Some of the modern technologies, some of the other, you know, technology companies has been around for a while. government is one of the last entities to really adopt technology. And it's going to take some really innovative leaders, some courageous leaders. And I encounter them all the time in my job as an advisor, but it's going to take someone stepping up and saying, you know what, we have got to do this. It's going to be painful, but we can make it through.
Let's double click on that for a minute. I think a lot of this comes down to certainly how stuff gets tested and how stuff gets purchased by government, right? So at Rubicon, with our Rubicon Smart City product, we've deployed it now in over 70 cities across the United States. And the vast majority of our current customers started in our pilot program. We have a pilot program that we run for 3 months in a city, and cities get to test the technology. We get to learn about the city and its unique operational challenges or opportunities. And then together with the city, you know, there is a decision, do they want to move forward and become a customer of ours? We think this is a great approach. About 85% of the cities that pilot with us go on to become long-term customers of ours. Is that the answer? Are there other answers to kind of accelerate the testing and adoption of technology in kind of a safe space for government? Because we believe that the pilot model allows that government official to have the ability to try something without taking a full leap and taking some of the risk out of the equation. Is that a good model? Or is there other models that governments in the private sector could be trying? How do we get stuff into their hands faster?
I love the pilot model. I think it's phenomenal because it gets everybody able to kick the tires. You know, because again, especially when you're talking about Rubicon, it's something new. You know, I remember I've been on two projects with you and it's something new. What do you mean Miss Sally doesn't have to be in the basement every day at 5 a.m. manually routing how the trucks are going to grid around the city? You know, what do you mean I can do it automatically? And so it's really scary for some people. And especially when people, that is Miss Sally's job. Mm-hmm. So now what does Miss Sally do every morning at 5 o'clock? And so what we're able to say is, hey, let's do a pilot. Let's try it. Let's make it not so scary. Because again, when it comes to modern technology, you also, especially in waste management, you may be dealing with people who are not familiar with technology. It's foreign to them. And so being able to do a pilot kind of slow rolls it in, gets people a little bit used to it. And they're like, you know what? It's not so bad. And Michael, I remember when we were on the panel with one of the gentlemen that was on the panel with us was talking about now that the waste management employees are excited to use those iPads. You know, they're excited to use the technology. And now they're getting skills that they would have probably never had in the position they were in. And so I love the idea of the pilot because, again, it gets people a little bit of a taste. It's not so scary. It's not throwing it at them all, you know, at once, but it really gives people an idea of, okay, you know what? This isn't so bad.
I love it. Well, we have our work cut out for us. We certainly at Rubicon are so proud to partner with you and with AWS. And these conversations, I think, you know, short but sweet, to the point, you know, get stuff into people's hands faster, do so in a way that builds trust. Bring everyone along, including that frontline worker. It's not just about management. These are great things for all technology companies and government at all levels to think about. I want to end on just a big picture question, unique to you. Now, I'm not asking you necessarily the AWS line, though perhaps you'll give me that. What is your vision for the future city? Does it have flying cars in it? Is it a place that picks up the trash on time? Is it some combination of the two? What are we talking about when we talk about the future city?
Yeah, I am sometimes leery on getting in autonomous vehicles. So I'm not sure if I'm getting in a flying one that's not actually a plane. But I, for me, the next generation, the next smart city is really about people getting the services quickly in the way that they want to get them. And I think that is, for me, that's a smart city, you know, and people being able to not have to be on the phone for 3 hours just to get a simple question answered. I would love to be able to go into a website and just put in, or even talk to, and I can't say it too loud because she may wake up, but the Alexa device, right? And I could just say something and she gives me the answer, you know, hey, you know, what's my tax bill this year? You know, something of that nature. To me, it's convenience. That, I think, is the way of the future. And again, nothing else taught us over the last years people want convenience. They want their groceries delivered to their door in some instances. They want a microwave and a yoga mat delivered to their house in 2 hours. You know, we've all gotten used to being able to have technology at our fingertips. And I think for me, having it available to everyone, regardless of their age, their demographics, where they live, that to me is what I would like to see for the future of cities.
I always love talking with you, Shantae. You keep it real. You dumb it down. And that's a compliment when I say that. You put it in terms that like regular people understand, you know, the future city is one that gets stuff done on time and in a way that people want. That's very simple. It does it equitably, right? It does it the same for everyone, which is a big part of it as well. So thank you so much, Amy. I hope Shantae and I were good guardians of the podcast.
You guys were great. And speaking to dumbing it down, I mean, you know, I'm hanging on every word. And obviously I've worked at Rubicon for a long time, so I understand it. But I think you guys broke it down in a way that's going to make sense to our target audience, our listeners, people who want to do better things for the planet, for their communities, for their families, but may not know where to start. Before we actually wrap up the whole show, I did want to play our rapid fire game with you, Shantae. I think you are so fascinating. And although this isn't a typical episode, it'll be nice to kind of pepper in the tradition. So I'm going to ask you a series of 10 quick questions, nothing crazy or inappropriate, and you just shout off the person that comes to your mind. You ready?
Oh, dear. Okay.
All it's right. Really not that bad.
Don't get me fired.
What does your morning routine look like?
Getting my child out of the door before the bus shows up.
What was the last show or series that you watched?
Foundation. I love sci-fi.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
An FBI agent.
What is one thing, you know, the last almost 2 years of the pandemic has really taught you?
That I don't spend enough time with my family and recreation activities.
What's one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self?
Relax. It will all work out.
If you could play any sport in the world professionally, what would you play and why?
I would say football. And I know it's not typical, but going after the quarterback just seems like a fun job to have.
What was your first ever job?
I sold sporting equipment and rifles at my local Kmart.
If you see blank on a menu, you're ordering it.
Mediterranean.
What is something that you do to relax?
Play golf.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Being happy and passionate in a job that you love.
I love that. Michael, you made me very, very proud. And truthfully, now I'm scared that I'm going to be out of a job because someone else could easily do this. Shantae, your passion and partnership, everything came across. Thank you both so much for such an interesting and thought-provoking conversation.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Amy. And thank you, Shantae. Always wonderful to be together with you guys.